Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for joining the T-Foy and Dixie podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Mark Dixon. And we are also joined by Andrew Baxter, recently named head coach of the Fairfield Stags, longtime assistant of the Yale Bulldogs, and a great friend of Inside Lacrosse, including a great beard for the sport of lacrosse. Although, Coach Bax, did that lose a few inches over the course of the summer?
It did. Through the trimmed it down a little bit for the interview process.
There you go. Perfect.
I didn't want to take it all the way down, so I tamed it a little bit. It's coming back.
You mentioned the interview process. Let's start there. What was it like going through the process to become the Stags' next head coach?
It was very cool, actually. So this place has always been in the back of my mind because when I first started coaching about 18 years ago, Fairfield was one of the first places I worked as camp at. And so I'd always had this vision of this place being a lacrosse kind of destination. So when the job opened, I was super excited about it. But it was a crazy whirlwind because, obviously playing on Memorial Day and then moving into, you know, ending our season, and then transitioning into looking at this job. It was a crazy few weeks, but, I told myself before the end of the season, I was just going to kind of, take it in stride and see what came about. And, this job really, you know, everything about it felt great. From President Nemec and Paul Schlickman, the director of athletics, we shared the same common vision for what we wanted the program to look like. And, it couldn't have been smoother and to be honest with you, couldn't be more comfortable at this place. It's been awesome.
Coach, what in particular about Fairfield Lacrosse? You mentioned that this was a program that you always, quote unquote, had your eye on, liked what they were doing. When it came time for Andrew Baxter to come up and take his swings at the plate, what are the things that really attracted you to Fairfield University?
Well, it's a great, obviously a great academic institution. So that was a draw for me coming over from Yale. You know, thinking I can get a similar type of kid that would be, you know, interested in furthering his career beyond lacrosse. Geographically, it's incredible location. You know, it's a big selling point for us here in terms of being in between major cities on the shoreline. You know, we can recruit from all areas. Tri-State, New York, we can get Baltimore kids up this way. So that was a huge selling point for me. And I think the support that the school is putting into the program is unbelievable. You know, they I know I mentioned President Nemec and Paul Schlickman earlier, director of athletics. Their vision for Fairfield is that lacrosse, along with basketball, is a identity for the university nationally. It's a pretty cool spot. You know, it's no football, no ice hockey. So we've got men's lacrosse and men's basketball at the top of the food chain here. And, we're looking to do big things.
So when you build off of that and you set the stage and you analyze, you know, what are the competitive assets and challenges that Fairfield has experienced? I think one of the things that's really interesting is honing in on what exactly the program is and has been able to accomplish. So, you know, when I look back at this program in the early part of this decade, you know, they were competing with Ohio State, Loyola, Denver, and Hobart for the, you know, kind of top spot in the ECAC. Transitioning to the CAA, which had been for that 5 to 8 year window, probably the most competitive conference in college lacrosse. And then, you know, over the last 5 years has, you know, really proven to be, kind of a stranglehold for Towson. I look at the landscape and I say, You know, Fairfield obviously has so many assets, which you just laid out, and a handful of challenges in terms of the competition within the ecosystem and kind of building the identity of the program, but it has proven the ability to be successful. So how do you meld all those together when it comes to the on-field product, and what has that meant for your approach this fall?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we definitely have a niche, I think, within our league. It's an interesting league because you have three private institutions and three, you know, state institutions. So, you know, our niche, I think, is on the academic front. One, I feel like we're one of the more competitive academic schools in our conference. So, we try to set ourselves apart there. And then, I think, in terms of the league, you know, obviously it's known as a blue collar kind of get your hands dirty league, and I think that's the mindset that we've been trying to get across to these guys this fall. You know, that we gotta get our hands dirty, and the first day of practice we talked about how to pick up a ground ball and what it means to pick up a tough ground ball, and so we're literally starting from scratch essentially in trying to teach these guys like they don't. You know, like they don't know anything at this point, and just start from the ground up and build it in our own way, and hoping that along with, you know, the academic niche, along with the geographical location, we can find a groove recruiting wise and find the guys that are attracted to, you know, those types of things. So that's where we've been starting this fall, and we feel like we're just trying to, you know, lay the groundwork there. You know, obviously, I'm staring right now at the 2015 and 2016 men's lacrosse regular season championship trophies from the Colonial Athletic Association. So, you know, we're not hiding from recruits or the team to say that, hey, we know we were 0-5 in the league last year, but you know, we're kind of hanging it over the head a little bit and saying, hey, if you want a you know, you want to contend for a championship, here's some of the things that we're going to have to do. And so that's kind of where we started this fall. And like I said, just trying to build it.
Coach, you mentioned the performance from a year ago, and obviously you're looking to build and have more success than that. You mentioned all the positives that had you lead to a decision to leave Yale as a highly successful assistant coach and take the head coaching job at Fairfield. What would have been some of the challenges that you've had to work through in the first couple months on the job?
Yeah, so we were talking today as a coaching staff after, and I think it's you know, getting them to think differently, I think, has been the biggest challenge in terms of what it takes, what a championship, you know, rep looks like, what a championship drill looks like, and then building all the way up to what a championship practice looks like. So we've been, you know, talking about that, not looking ahead, but just holding them to a higher standard of what that could look like, should look like, and I think that's been the biggest challenge, is just changing the mindset that we can compete for a championship here if we do these things the right way, and I think just getting that point across to the guys and like I said, we've talked about picking up a ground ball. We've been doing 2v1s at practice. So we've been really cutting it down to the basics, and we're trying to show the guys how to play lacrosse the right way through practice, through film, and all those things. So I think that's been the biggest challenge for us as a staff, is just trying to get these guys to think differently and what it takes to get to the top.
So you mentioned the staff. How did you go about building out the group that you were going to support on?
That's a great question. Because it was my first time going through that, so it was a very cool experience for me. I'm fortunate that I got to go through it. I ended up landing three guys that I think are super passionate about teaching the game the right way, and that was the most important thing for me when I was, you know, talking to guys and about coming to Fairfield, and I wanted guys that wanted to, you know, teach the game and start from scratch, all those things we've been talking about. I was fortunate enough to land Craig Gibson from Stony Brook, who's been a friend of mine and was a college teammate of mine way back in the day at Springfield College, who's going to run our offense. He's been incredible so far. Charles Junta from St. Joe's, who was a four-year player at St. Joe's, captain, defenseman. He's going to work with our defense. And then Matt Dalton, who is our volunteer, came over from Nazareth College, did his grad work and a couple years at Springfield College as well. And those guys, you know, like I said, set themselves apart in terms of their willingness and ability to teach the game and dive right into kind of what we're building here. So the chemistry with the staff and the team has been awesome so far. I've been super pumped. The energy has been great. But like I said, it was a very cool experience for me.
Coach, this isn't your first foray into the Colonial Athletic Association. You were an assistant at Drexel back in the mid-late 2000s, and obviously some of the teams have changed in the CAA. But overall, when you look at taking over in 2019, preparing for the 2020 season at Fairfield, how has CAA lacrosse transformed from the time you were an assistant at Drexel?
That's a great question. Not too sure yet, to be honest with you. Because I know some of the teams, obviously, from the last few years. We played UMass the last couple of years, but I'm not too familiar with specifically some of the teams in the league yet. I'm obviously familiarizing myself with their styles and that kind of thing. But, you know I referenced it before, but it's always been known as kind of that blue-collar, get-your-hands-dirty league, which is something we kind of hung our hat on when I was at Drexel and we learned to play with the chip on our shoulder and that kind of thing. And I think that's what helped us gain success when I was at Drexel there. Like I said, just trying to familiarize myself with this league. I know there's some really good teams, some great coaches in the league. So it's going to be a challenge. I'm psyched. I think once these guys, you know, start to think a little bit differently, like we talked about earlier, and just kind of dive right in, we'll be fine. We'll be able to compete with all these teams in our league.
You mentioned that chip on the shoulder kind of situation as well, and the success that you experienced at Yale, particularly over the last 2 years, national champions and national runner-up. Yale's a team that always played with a chip on their shoulder, regardless of the level of success. How is that experience at Yale going to translate into being a head coach at Fairfield?
Hopefully pretty well. I've been trying to instill a lot of the things that I learned from Coach Shea to the program here. You know, just in terms of we always talked about, you know, talent wasn't going to win us games. It was going to be the work that we put in that would ultimately get us wins and championships. And I'm just trying to instill that as the number one priority for these guys. They're like, hey, we're not going to win on talent plays alone. We need to grind and do work and pick up ground balls. So that was one thing I think that you know, people noticed a lot about Yale was that we obviously had the talent, but every guy played hard and played with a selfless attitude. And that's another thing we've been talking a ton about this fall is selfless plays. And we kind of outlined some of them for the guys, and we've been actually building to that list as we go through the fall and having guys write them down as they happen organically at practice. You know, diving for loose balls, diving for end lines, picking up tough ground balls, finishing your cut on offense, those type of things. We've been honing in on those, and that was something that another thing that I took from Yale as well that helped us get to where we got. And, I owe Coach Shea a ton of I give him a ton of credit for teaching me all those and imparting all that stuff, and hopefully trying to take as much of it as I can here and put my own twist on things.
Along those lines, in terms of the way in which your career has developed, one thing that's fascinating, and I'm not certain, I'm taking a little bit of a leap that you're comfortable talking about this, but you know, my sense is that, or my understanding is that when you arrived at Yale, you weren't certain what your future in college coaching, as far as, you know, it being your career, was going to look like. You know, so now that you've advanced through that tremendous experience and settled into this opportunity, how do you reflect on just the decision-making process that you kind of went through and the development of the ambition to become a head coach?
Yeah, absolutely. I was questioning coaching there for a little bit. I just, as I think a lot of people do in their careers, they question whether this is what they should be doing or is it their calling and that kind of thing. And that's kind of where I was at. And very fortunate that I did find out that lacrosse is my calling and teaching is my calling. And, Coach Shea, I remember him calling me up and being, because we had known each other for a long time. And he was kind of like, what are you doing? Why don't you, come work with me? It'll be great. And I was like, I don't know, at first. And then as I thought about it more, I was like, you know what, maybe I should give it another shot. And very, very glad that I did. To answer your question, lacrosse has been very good to me. Like I told a lot of people, the sport has been incredibly kind to me. I've had so many great people that have either mentored me or taught me a lot about, the game and then life as well. So, I haven't talked a lot about it to a lot of people, but I appreciate you bringing it up. And it was a interesting moment in my life. Everything happens for a reason, and I am ecstatic to be here at Fairfield now.
Sort of keeping on that topic, Coach, you've been at this for almost 20 years. You mentioned 18 years in coaching, and this is your first head coaching gig. There's a lot of young assistants out there trying to make their way and maybe hoping to become the next Andrew Baxter or the next Andrew mm-hmm. Stimmel. What advice would you give those young coaches that are starting out? Might be coming to or anticipating a crossroads that you experienced a few years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. I think just meet as many people as you can that are involved with the sport and develop relationships with them. And I still remember my first year at Colgate. I was with Jim Nagel, and he was like, "Bax, you sure you want to do this?" And I was like, "I think so." He's like, "All right, well, let me give you a, let me give you some advice." He's like, "The next two summers, pack up your car, live in your car, go work as many camps as you can, meet as many people around the game as you can, and then go from there." And it was probably the most sound advice I got, because that's exactly what I did. I had a late 90s Honda Civic two-door that I packed to the gills with every piece of clothing I had, and lived out of it for two summers. And this is pretty funny, actually. It was before GPS and all that, so I actually had an actual map of the United States.
No way.
I swear to God. And I highlighted my route, what camps I was going to, because I probably worked one summer. I can't remember the number, but it was almost every day of the summer, and I just worked as many as I could, goalie camps, face-off camps, everything. And just met as many people as I could and talked to as many people as I could and just worked and tried to show as many people as I could that I knew what I was talking about, even if I really didn't. And so that kind of got me off on the right foot, and I was able to just use those connections as I got further in my career to take me to all the places that I've been. And it's been so that would be my best advice for young coaches, is to just develop relationships, lacrosse-wise, ask as many questions as you can, work as many camps and clinics and things like that as you can in order to hone your craft on the field in terms of teaching the game, and then network yourself as best you can. So that'd be my biggest advice.
Building off of that, one of the things that I admire about you and think is going to be an interesting thing to continue to watch develop is that you're true to your style and you're true to who you are. And I joked about the beard at the beginning, but I do think that there's some, truth to the fact that you've made the decision to be comfortable in your own skin. And I think, to Mark's point, there are a lot of young aspiring coaches who feel like they have to fit into a certain box in order to advance their careers. What do you say to that notion?
I think you hit it right on the head. You gotta be yourself. You know what I mean? It's like the first thing we wrote on the board actually this year at Fairfield in our first team meeting was become the best version of yourself. And I think that's so true. It's like, don't try to be someone you're not, you know what I mean? So, which is hard for a lot of young people, but I think try to become the best version of you is huge. And I don't think we emphasize that enough as a society. And like I said, I've been trying to impart that on these guys, just like, hey, you know, be yourself, work hard, and you know, good things will happen. Because I don't know, that's just how I've been brought up. That's who I am. So it's an interesting question and topic. I love it.
You're a defensive coach, and with the shot clock now entering its second season, it was very positively received by fans, coaches, players, anyone associated with the game of lacrosse. Has it changed the way you approach defense or the way your teams have to play defense?
We really haven't. I think what's been pretty good about the system and the way I've been teaching defense for years now is that it's pretty universal. Like even with the dive this year, we didn't really change, you know, how we taught defense at the goal line or anything like that, or our scheme to prevent the dive or anything like that. I think if you have a good system, you know, I think it works with any rules essentially, you know. And I think, you know, we always would talk about different things that we could do with the shot clock, whether that be playing, you know, and there are good tactics, I think, to implement at times in terms of maybe playing a zone off the end line or shutting some people off when there's low time, things like that. But I think as a general defensive philosophy, we didn't change much, you know, and I think it helped us. And I think what helped us a lot, too, was that we've been playing kind of that shot clock style before even the shot clock came out. Like, we were playing guys two ways and playing fast to begin with. So I think that helped us. We were used to it already, if that makes sense. So I think, you know, one of the other biggest things I learned from Coach A. Yale was less is more. And I think it applies definitely to my defensive philosophy. We try to be as simple as possible and take the decision making out of guys' hands and just let them play. And I think that's helped with the shot clock.
What's the biggest difference between being an assistant and being a head coach?
The biggest difference is that as the head coach, I feel like everyone needs you at some point throughout the day, the week, the month. So far, I've only been a head coach for a couple months, but I feel like every day has been jam packed with something. To be honest with you, and I told this to a few people. It's incredible. As an assistant, you can find your groove in terms of just you know, touching base with your guys and your unit or who you're, you know, specifically coaching. And now as a head coach, it's like I've got, you know, instead of 20 defensemen, I've got 50 guys. I've got all the D guys, all the O guys. I've got, you know, all the just everyone. So, in a positive way though, my days are just packed. I have no time to, check Twitter or go online anymore. You know, it's like, my days are full. So definitely the biggest adjustment and difference from going from the assistant chair to the head chair.
Well, Andrew Baxter, that's a great place to end because it sounds like you've got something to get onto. And with that, I want to thank you for your time and participation on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. We really appreciate the insight. We wish you the best of luck as you continue through fall ball and begin to turn your attention to your debut season, let's call it that, in the spring of 2020. And, of course, we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate the time. This is awesome.
And if you like what you heard, please tell a friend, leave a rating and review, follow us on Twitter @inside_lacrosse. You won't find Coach Baxter there anymore because he doesn't have any time. Follow us on Instagram at Inside Lacrosse, and we'll be back with more podcasts later in the week.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.